Destiny players may not be able to agree on many things about the game. Which class is the best? Does Gambit suck? But if there's one thing that the community can probably agree on, the first day that a new raid drops in Destiny is a wild time. Thousands of teams all competing and racing to earn a 24-hour clear, as well as the rare honor of being crowned world's first. Today, we're going to go through the entire history of day one raids in both Destiny 1 and 2. The memories, the numbers, the triumphs, and the drama. Starting with, what is a Destiny raid? For those who may not know, a raid in Destiny is a PvE activity designed to be completed by a fireteam of 6 players. You venture through an entirely new, never before explored area while being attacked by extremely tough enemies and also being forced to solve complex puzzles as a group. In short, imagine you're trying to complete an escape room puzzle with 5 of your closest friends, all while trying to defend yourself from robots who are trying to kill you the entire time. It's among the hardest content in the game, and because it takes Bungie so long to design raids, new raids are released rarely, often 2 times per year on average. Because these occasions are so rare, day one of a new raid dropping is a big day in the Destiny community, as players are either trying their best to complete the raid with their friends or watching top streamers competing with one another for the coveted title of World's First, aka the first team worldwide to complete the raid. Being the first team ever to beat a raid is a significant challenge, and aside from the clout, whichever team does get World's First is given a rare gift, a world championship belt designed by Bungie. But Destiny has been around for a while, and day one raids have changed a lot over the years. Heavy sandbox changes, fluctuations in difficulty, changes to raid race structure, and of course, community drama. But now that you know what a raid is, let's start at the very beginning. Vault of Glass was Destiny 1's first ever raid, releasing on Tuesday, September 16th, 2014, a mere 7 days after the release of Destiny 1 itself, which launched on September 9th. The raid took place on Venus and challenged players to open the vault and descend deep down into the planet to fight back the Vex and eliminate the final boss, Atheon. A grand total of 100,079 players attempted the Vault of Glass on day one, a respectable number considering how new Destiny was at the time. Compared to current raids, D1 Vault of Glass was relatively tame by comparison, but many players were not ready for the challenge. Of all the players who attempted the raid on day one, a grand total of just 22 teams would wind up completing it within the first 24 hours. The world's first clear for Vault of Glass, and the first ever team to be declared world's first in any Destiny raid, was claimed by a clan called Primeguard. It had taken them a grand total of 10 hours and 43 minutes to beat the raid in full. When Bungie tweeted out their congratulations to Primeguard on their accomplishment, the replies ranged from respect to horror, as many players thought Destiny was just another standard shooter title, and this challenge seemed very extreme when compared to the rest of the game. I knew raids were going to be huge, but the sheer number of kills during that mission, my word. 281 deaths? The fuck? Is this even real? Completely stupid, making it that hard. Gonna piss off a lot of people. One of the members of Primeguard's day one team went to Reddit to answer questions about their day one clear, mentioning that their reward for killing Atheon was a shader called Chatterwhite, and saying, quote, "It's pretty much all white and looks quite cool." Some players were confused at the time about the reward being just a mere shader, not knowing that years in the future, the community would be forever requesting the return of that exact shader in Destiny 2, as all other pure white options were never quite able to live up to the visual glory of original D1 Chatterwhite. Reddit mods offered Primeguard Day 1 VOG players a special world's first Reddit flair. It's worth noting that Reddit mod Cosmo23 would later be hired to work at Bungie as a community manager and still works there to this day. The world's second team to beat the Vault of Glass raid consisted of the following players, including now well-known community member and streamer Datto. Oddly enough, this would not be Datto's only second place raid clear, nor would it be the raid he would be most well-known for, but we'll get to that a bit later. Also, if you're shocked to learn that players had so little time to prepare for the first ever raid after the launch of a brand new franchise, then you'll really be shocked to learn about the next raid in Destiny 1, Crota's End. The Crota's End raid launched on Tuesday, December 9th, 2014, which happened to be the same day as the launch of Destiny 1's first expansion, The Dark Below. The raid took place on the moon and was the first raid to feature all Hive enemies, as the Guardian sought to challenge and defeat the Hive god Crota, a giant knight worshipped by the Hive, who was also responsible in the story for demolishing the fireteam and ghost of beloved Destiny character Eris Morn. Destiny 1's popularity was on the rise at this point, and even though Crota's End would wind up being a shorter raid by comparison, the number of teams that showed up to take on the new raid surged. A grand total of 288,328 players attempted the Crotus End raid on day one, more than doubling the number that had taken on Vault of Glass. While many teams would reach the final boss faster than they had in Vault of Glass, the majority of them would become stuck, as they were not able to deal enough damage to the final boss Crota to complete the raid. One fire team, Invigorate Gaming, assumed that the Crota's End raid, like Vault of Glass, would contain some kind of relic, aka a temporarily wieldable unique weapon, and it would probably be a good idea to have a fire team member with the highest possible light wield that relic for the best overall chance of success. Their assumptions were correct, as the raid did in fact feature another unique relic-type weapon, a large wieldable hive sword, which was used to damage Crota after forcing him to take a knee once he had taken enough weapon damage. Working on this assumption, Invigorate moved forward with an interesting strategy. They would temporarily swap out one member of their fire team to leave the raid and go grind strikes and other PvE content to increase their overall power, then swapped that player back into the fire team when it was time to fight Crota. Remember, because Crota's End released on day one of the Dark Below expansion, many players had to divide their time between power grinding and diving into the raid straight away. Their strategy paid off, and Invigorate Gaming claimed the title of world's first team to beat the Crota's End raid with a grand total time of 5 hours and 58 minutes, almost half as fast as the first clear of Vault of Glass. If you're wondering why some sites show 7 members total on the world's first fire team, remember, they had swapped up their fire team mid-raid. Despite the surging player numbers, only 12 fire teams total managed to complete the Crota's End raid within the first 24 hours, slightly less than the number of teams that were able to clear Vault. It seemed that the number of teams capable of completing a day one raid might only get smaller from here on out, but Destiny's next raid was going to shake up the numbers hard. After the Dark Below and Crota's End launched in December of 2014, no more raids would be introduced for a period of over half a year. Then, during E3 2015, Bungie announced the Taken King expansion, which would bring more loot, new subclasses, and a brand new raid called King's Fall, featuring Oryx, aka the Taken King himself, who was here to seek revenge for what we, the Guardians, had done to his son, Crota. With the launch of the Taken King, Bungie decided to introduce the first ever case of sunsetting in Destiny's history. Weapons obtained during the first year would have their power caps. It was a hard reset that would force players to grind for new gear if they wanted to be raid ready. On top of all that, Bungie released the biggest balancing patch the game had seen up until that point, along with the launch of the Taken King, meaning that the PvE meta in particular experienced a pretty hard shakeup. The Taken King expansion released on Tuesday, September 15th, 2015, with the raid following 3 days later on Friday, September 18th. A grand total of 777,270 players attempted the raid, a massive leap up from the number of players who attempted Crota's End, and the highest number of Day 1 raid participants in Destiny to this day. Many raid racers were streaming their gameplay live on Twitch, and for the first time, Bungie game devs were watching the race unfold live from their HQ in Washington. At Bungie, we were humbled and fascinated to be a part of the live audience for everyone who broadcasted their raid attempts in plain sight of the entire internet. All day long, our people jumped from stream to stream to compare strategies and hairstyles. All of you were absolutely fabulous. Oryx is challenging enough, without the elective addition of prying eyes and a raging chat room. Thanks for letting us see the experience we created unfold in real time. That was an absolute trip. The final boss encounter of King's Fall marked the first ever instance of what would become a future raid staple, the final stand mechanic. In short, it meant that once Oryx's health bar got low enough, he would perform one last act of all-or-nothing desperation, forcing fire teams to give it their all and finish him for good or die trying. During the raid, a team called Versus the Stream, who up to that point was ahead in the overall raid race, believed they'd completely defeated Oryx, only to get caught off guard and perish during his final stand mechanic. As to be expected, word of this new mechanic started making the rounds, and eventually made its way to Team Rare Drop through Twitch chat, who was then prepared for it.
I hear we have to hit him again after he's done, so just be wary, be ready.
Ultimately, Team Rare Drop would officially snag the world's first clear with a completion time of 6 hours and 40 minutes. Bungie's community manager Cosmo was quoted saying, "Big congrats to them for sticking with it to the end. Also, a shout out to Versus the Stream for coming so close to taking him down first. They deserve a lot of credit for second place." Even though the number of hours needed to beat King's Fall was similar to Crota's End, the number of Guardians able to get across the finish line grew more than 10 times. 100 179 teams wound up completing the raid on day one, a big uptick from the 12 teams that managed to complete Crota's End. But if you think that was a large jump up in day one completion rates, then just wait until you hear about the next raid that would launch in Destiny 1, Wrath of the Machine. Over a year would go by before Destiny 1 players would see the next expansion, Rise of Iron, which dropped on Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. The Wrath of the Machine raid would drop 3 days later on Friday, September 23rd. The raid took place in a new version of the Cosmodrome Patrol area, the Plaguelands. Guardians were being beckoned by the enigmatic Lord Saladin, who ran an occasional PvP game type called Iron Banner. Story-wise, the enemy faction known as the Fallen had found unique technology from before the collapse, used it to enhance themselves, and brought some old enemies back, threatening the last city. Just as with King's Fall a year prior, players had 3 days to grind and level up to be ready for the race. However, this time there was no gear reset and no regrind the way there was in the Taken King. Some of the original exotics from year one had been reissued, including the infamous Gjallarhorn. The gear infusion system was also simplified, making it easier for players to rise in power faster. The Wrath of the Machine raid was attempted on day one by 350,683 Guardians, a hard decline from the number of players who had challenged the Taken King, but still more than any other day one raid at that point in time. At this point in the game's lifespan, Destiny players were beginning to understand the game's core mechanics and raids themselves way more overall. Leading up to the Wrath of the Machine, many fire teams had started to challenge themselves in a very interesting way, by beating past raids in groups of three instead of six, a practice now commonly referred to as low manning. Even more players were still designing strategies to beat certain raid encounters as a fire team of just two or even on their own. Many members of a clan called Redeem were extremely well known for doing this, and their hard work and dedicated practice paid off in spades. The world's first clear for Wrath of the Machine was claimed by Clan Redeem, who absolutely demolished the record for fastest clear of a day one raid up to that point, with an insane time of 1 hour and 59 minutes. To defeat the final boss, Axis, Redeem's main arsenal consisted of weapons like the Hungjury, the Imago Loop, the Irene RR4, and the exotic heavy weapons Gjallarhorn and Sleeper Simulant. Oddly enough, there were no Warlocks on Redeem's fire team, making this the first of three rare occurrences of a world's first team only using two of the three classes to earn a clear. If you look at the raid report for the world's first clear, you'll notice there was a Guardian on the fire team that went by the name of Sneed. But what if I told you that the person playing on Sneed's account was actually YouTuber and streamer Tfue. In short, the actual player Sneed, a different player altogether, explained that Tfue, who played a lot of Destiny at the time and was a member of Clan Redeem, wasn't able to prepare on his own account. To help him out, Sneed, who had prepared and grinded very much, lent his account to Tfue to use during the raid race. To anyone that's confused, Tfue was playing on my account because he was on vacation and needed an account to play on. A world's first raid completion is an impressive accomplishment, no matter how you look at it, but some players in the community had mixed feelings about a player earning a world's first raid title on an account that was not their own. This is something that absolutely could not happen today, since Bungie has since updated their terms of service in recent years to prohibit this type of behavior, which became commonly known in the community over the years as an account recovery. All in all, Wrath of the Machine was a widely popular and loved raid among the community, with a whopping 2,911 teams managing to clear the raid on day one, which was more than every other day one raid race combined, and an overall completion rate of close to 5%. Wrath of the Machine would ultimately be the final raid of Destiny 1. Little did players know at the time that a new game was fast approaching, and they truly weren't prepared for the amount of changes, game and raid-wise, that they were about to face.
If the Red Legion want war, give them war.
About half a year after the release of Rise of Iron, the Destiny Twitter account would make a post officially revealing and announcing Destiny 2. The community hype train went wild for months, and the game itself would finally arrive on Wednesday, September 6th, 2017, almost exactly 3 years after the launch of D1. 1 week later, players would jump into the heavily anticipated Leviathan raid, which launched on September 13th, the first and only time in the history of the franchise that a day one raid race would occur on a Wednesday. Since Destiny 2 was an entirely entirely new game from Destiny 1, players weren't able to save bounties in preparation for the Leviathan raid. New strategies to power level and prepare for the raid were being explored, but there was a problem. At that time in Destiny 2, there were a limited number of in-game activities that could reward players with useful gear for increasing their power. Essentially, players were capped in the number of drops they were able to obtain per week. To bypass this restriction, some dedicated players were doing those limited activities as fast as possible with all their characters. They would save their higher power loot in their vault, delete one of their characters, then make a brand new character, re-equip the loot they had saved, and continue grinding, rinse, and repeat. Although this was both time and labor intensive, it was a proven method of bypassing the limit of how much gear a player could obtain per week, and is one of the first known cases of players bending the rules of the game to be more raid ready. During the Leviathan raid itself, players now had to deal with an entirely new raid mechanic that would become a staple for years to come. You see, in Destiny 1, reviving dead teammates off the ground was something that could be done indefinitely. In the Leviathan raid, Bungie implemented the first ever use of the revive token mechanic, which allowed you to revive a dead teammate as long as you had a revive token allowing you to do so. Guardians were only given one revive token each that could be only used once per encounter. A player's revive token would replenish anytime you restarted an encounter, but it shook things up quite a bit. If your dead teammate needed to get revived, but you had no tokens remaining, you wouldn't be able to bring them back to life. On top of that, a special in-game timer would activate the moment any guardian on the fireteam died, and if that timer ever reached zero, the entire fireteam would be completely wiped and fail the encounter. All of this meant that you could no longer revive teammates over and over during an encounter. You had to be careful with your lives, and too many deaths would result in not being able to bring your teammates back to life, which would in turn guarantee you would fail that encounter and have to try again. While many changes in D2 were received positively, others were not. Bungie had changed the overall weapon system drastically from Destiny 1, and players were now forced to use two primary ammo weapons together, while weapons that used to run on special ammo, like snipers and shotguns, had been oddly crammed into the heavy weapon slot. Raid-wise, many Day 1 raiders were not happy about the new loot system introduced in Destiny 2, which sometimes would not reward loot or simply give players keys rather than direct weapon drops. Players who did get weapon drops directly were also not thrilled, as Bungie had made the odd decision that weapons would have static rolls instead of random rolls, meaning far less variety in loot overall. I'm more upset over the fact that I completed two parts of the raid and there was no loot, no tokens, no rewards. Cade promised us loot. Does this raid even have actual rewards other than just tokens and aqueduct keys? Overall, game changes aside, players were still relatively excited with the challenge of the new raids being a bit harder than they were in D1. Despite the new challenges and odd loot structure, the team, the Legend himself, would eventually obtain the world's first clear after defeating the final boss, a robotic clone of the extravagant Cabal Emperor Kallus, with a final clear time of 5 hours and 34 minutes. A grand total of 591,985 players wound up attempting the Day 1 Leviathan raid, an impressive leap up from the 350,000-ish players who had attempted Wrath of the Machine, but the success rate was now far lower. Only 761 teams would eventually complete the Leviathan raid on day one, significantly fewer Guardians compared to the 2,911 teams that had conquered Wrath. It was starting to look like only the most organized clans and fire teams were in contention to grab a world's first clear, but no one was prepared for what would happen in Destiny 2's next raid, Eater of Worlds. The infamous Curse of Osiris expansion released on Tuesday, December 5th, 2017, only a few short months after the release of D2 itself. The expansion dropped to mostly negative reviews from the fanbase, as players felt the content and structure of the game was lacking, and the active player numbers were down at this point in the game as a result. The raid itself would drop days later on Friday, December 8th, and was officially referred to by Bungie as a raid lair, a shorter, less complex raid overall. 207,852 Guardians would descend into the Leviathan to participate in the Eater of Worlds raid, a noticeable decline from the Leviathan raid's day one numbers. But despite the dip in overall player numbers from D2's first raid, something else from the Eater of Worlds raid was making far more headlines. As it turned out, the team that ultimately snagged the title of World's First was a group of random players who had literally met the night before in a Discord LFG channel. A player by the name of Mike E asked for a group of Guardians willing to attempt the raid when it released the following morning, and 5 Guardians answered the call. The only activity they did as any kind of preparation was a Leviathan's Castellum right before starting the race. During the raid itself, Mike E's LFG team discovered how to stun the final boss to start a second phase before any other team. Since other teams that were nearing the finish line were struggling with this mechanic, the end result was a world's first clear obtained by the following Guardians who had met less than 20 24 hours ago. They had completed the raid with a blindingly fast time of 1 hour and 37 minutes. Even to this day, it remains the fastest time any Destiny team has completed a day one raid. Another lesser known fun fact is that it also marked the first time a raid was completed on day one by a team made up of entirely deaf guardians who communicated in other ways throughout the raid. All in all, 4,545 teams completed the raid on day one, aka a grand total of 27,270 overall guardians. That meant that Eater of Worlds now boasted the highest day one raid completion ratio at the time by far, with 13% of teams that attempted to beat the raid on day one ultimately succeeding. Despite the troublesome state of the game at that point, the Destiny community as a whole was floored by the fact that a random LFG team had gotten the title of World's First, as it truly proved that not only streamers or diehard PvE clans could get such a coveted achievement. Some players were worried that Eater of Worlds was proof that raids were becoming too easy, but they had no idea what was in store for them in the next two raids. The second expansion for Destiny 2, Warmind, released on Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. The expansion focused on the character Anna Bray and the Warmind Rasputin and would take players to new areas on Mars. Just 3 days later, the Spire of Stars raid would drop on Friday, May 11th, 2018. The player base didn't know it at the time, but Destiny 2 would change drastically in the coming months, and Spire of Stars would officially be the end of the raid lair era. The raid would yet again take place aboard Kallus' Leviathan, the same starting location as both the Leviathan raid and Eater of Worlds raid lair. It seemed to be clear that players at that point were beginning to grow tired of vanilla Destiny 2 and the raid lair format, as only 48,754 Guardians total attempted the raid on day one. This was officially the lowest day one raid player count at that point in all of Destiny, and to this day stands as the second overall least attempted day one raid in the history of the franchise. While Spire was a significantly challenging raid in terms of final boss difficulty, the rest of the raid was relatively straightforward. Most teams competing for the world's first completion wound up breezing through the majority of the raid and getting to the final boss encounter after just 1 hour or so of racing. At that point, it seemed that this raid lair would be very much on par with Eater of Worlds overall. However, once they reached the final boss, things proved to get much more challenging. The mechanics were a bit more complex than players were used to, and it would take the first team more than 5 hours of taking on the final boss before earning the clear. Clan Redeem was one of those teams. In addition to the final boss, they were also battling severe connection issues, needing to sub out one of their main players on the fly. In addition to random connection hiccups, some of the raid mechanics were allegedly bugged and not always working properly, even denying streamer Esoteric and his team what seemed like a surefire clear. Tensions would continue to run high, but in the end, Clan Redeem would officially wind up grabbing another world's first clear with a final clearing time of 6 hours and 35 minutes. The first year of Destiny 2 was beginning to wind down, and unfortunately things were not off to a fantastic start. Players overall were not happy with the core elements of the game that had changed from Destiny 1. Things like static weapon rolls and the double primary weapon meta were not as popular as Bungie had hoped, and as it turned out, neither were raid lairs. Spire of Stars was the second ever raid lair in Destiny 2, and it was also the last one players would ever see, as it was clear that the raid lair format was not as popular with the community overall. Ultimately, only 19 fire teams managed to clear Spire on day one total. Granted, far fewer teams had stepped into the raid's lair to begin with, but this was still a massive decline when compared to other raids in D2. Little did the player base know, though, that things were about to get shaken up in a massive way, as Destiny 2 was about to go through sweeping changes overall, and the next raid would go down in history for being one of the most infamous challenges in the history of the game.
So, this is to be a reckoning.
I know where Aldrin and his barren scheme.
You have no idea what he's done!
The line between light and dark is so very thin.
On Tuesday, September 4th, 2018, just 2 days before the one-year anniversary of Destiny 2 launching, Bungie would release the Forsaken expansion, as well as a new seasonal model for the game moving forward. The Forsaken expansion was a massive change for Destiny 2 overall, and added a ton of heavily requested features into the game. Weapon drops were now back to having randomized perks as opposed to static rolls. Special ammo weapons were reintroduced into the game, moving many shotguns and sniper rifles out of the heavy slot and ending the infamous double primary ammo weapon meta. Unlike Destiny 1, though, which only featured primary ammo weapons in the kinetic slot and special ammo weapons in the energy slot, the Forsaken update introduced some special ammo weapons into the energy slot and the kinetic slot, as well as primary ammo weapons in the energy slot. In short, players could now potentially run two special ammo weapons at once for the first time if they wanted to. A whole host of new supers were also introduced into the game, including the all-new Warlock Well of Radiance, an ability that allowed players to create a temporary zone that would both continuously heal and boost the damage output of any and all players standing in the well. This super was immediately hailed by the player base as being incredibly powerful, and would eventually cement Solar Warlocks as a borderline mandatory day one raid staple from this point on. In addition to weapon and super changes, the game's leveling system was being overhauled too. Players would now start at 380 light, and their rewards would help them rise in power until they hit an overall cap of 500. At that point, players would then need to rely on a limited number of daily and weekly engrams called Prime and Powerful engrams to raise their power level further. Players began to grind because for the first time ever, they actually had time. Even though the Forsaken expansion released on September 4th, 2018, the Last Wish raid would not be released until Friday, September 14th, a full 10 days later. It was the longest gap between the launch of an expansion and the release of its corresponding raid in the history of Destiny, as Bungie wanted to give players time to adapt to the myriad of changes that had been introduced into the game. As the days ticked by, players were getting more and more hyped for the release of the new raid. Bungie announced that for the first time ever, new rewards were up for grabs. Any team that cleared the raid during the initial 24-hour window would receive an exclusive in-game emblem, and every player clearing it before the next weekly reset would get the right to purchase a commemorative raid jacket if they wished. In addition to that, the team that locked up the world's first clear would get something even more rare, a world's first championship belt that would be inscribed with their in-game player name. Needless to say, players were pumped. The Last Wish raid would drop on Friday, September 14th, and players knew right away that things were different. Up until that point in time, Destiny raids had featured only one or two bosses overall. As the raid unfolded, players would come to learn that the Last Wish raid featured four bosses. It had more encounters than any other raid, and it forced players to be underleveled by a big margin. The recommended light requirement for the first raid encounter was 550. That recommended number would go up to 580 for the final encounter, and back then, very few players in the game, no matter how hard they grinded since the launch of Forsaken, had the time or the luck to come anywhere close to hitting that number. The power discrepancy caused all but the most prepared teams to tap out early. Those that were able to stay in pushed forward as best they could. The first three encounters of Last Wish were on par with previous raids. They had clear and straightforward mechanics, followed by a DPS phase where you had to damage a boss with a chunky health bar. Things would take a hard turn at the fourth encounter, though, known as the Vault. This encounter was different. There was no boss to be found, only several rooms linked together and several plates on the floor surrounding a large odd structure that would display seemingly random symbols. This was a straight-up puzzle encounter, and day one raiders were thrown for a huge loop as they struggled for hours to decipher exactly how the encounter worked. After several hours of attempts, the members of Team Math Class, who were slowly making progress on this encounter and also streaming live on Twitch, decided to intentionally cut the audio of their streams so that no other teams could potentially tune into their Twitch channels and listen to their strategies.
We can go into another channel and talk about it in a second, but I think...
I just want to get more data.
Yeah.
I can just mute.
I'm gonna... Hold on, let me get a Google Sheet up too.
Same, I can just mute.
This is one of the first known instances of Day 1 Raid Racers intentionally muting audio or video of their streams to prevent other teams from watching and learning their strategies, a practice that still sometimes happens to this day and that the Destiny community overall is very torn on. But while everyone was struggling to figure out exactly how the Vault encounter worked, some teams, like Ninjis, were able to get lucky and brute force the encounter, meaning while they didn't understand how or why they were able to complete it, they were able to beat the encounter due to a hearty mixture of repetition, determination, and luck. Soon after, Clan Redeem was also able to brute force the Vault encounter, and both teams would move on to face the final boss of Last Wish, the giant wish-granting Ahamkara Riven. As players would soon find out, Riven was by far the most complex boss fight ever released in a raid up to this point. Fire teams would have to split up into two smaller teams to execute a series of mechanics with perfect communication, as any mistake in relaying information between the teams could potentially result in a complete fire team wipe. This was a grueling challenge for many teams, as it meant that the slightest mistake would be very costly. Riven also featured a bizarre new mechanic, a second final stand. In a nutshell, during the first final stand, players would have to group shoot her in the mouth until her health bar was completely gone, but that would not be enough. Players would then need to run into Riven's open mouth, into the center of her body, and destroy her heart to officially put her down for good. Because no mechanic like this had ever been seen in a raid before, many were caught off guard. For example, Team Math Class was about to wipe the encounter due to the fact that one of their teammates was down, but no one had a revive token left. They assumed that it wouldn't matter anyway, because they were so close to fully depleting Riven's health bar. But even after Riven seemingly went down, they still wiped due to the depleting resurrection timer, because the encounter wasn't truly over, as they still needed to run into her mouth and finish her for good. Eventually, Redeem would be the first to successfully finish Riven, but in yet another out-of-nowhere surprise, the raid was still not truly over. For the first time ever, there was a post-final boss sequence called the Queen's Walk. Players had to physically take Riven's heart and carry it all the way to a certain area, getting attacked the entire way, where they would be truly done with the raid. Each player could only carry the heart of Riven for so long before ultimately getting teleported inside her heart itself, where they would have to fight for their life. Players were already extremely tired at this point, and the 24-hour window was fast approaching. At long last, after a grueling 18 hours and 49 minutes, Clan Redeem would earn the title of World's First Completion of the Last Wish Raid, and being the first team ever to not only win two World's First titles, but to do so back-to-back. The Last Wish Raid was by far the longest it had taken any team to earn a World's First title up to that point in time. The second team to finish, Tier 1, managed to get their clear 3 hours and 26 minutes after Redeem's. This remains, to this day, the longest gap between the first and second team's clearing of a Day 1 raid. With the incredibly strict power requirements and the grueling challenge of the Last Wish raid, it seemed that only a few teams remained that were even capable of achieving a Day 1 clear at that point. All eyes had suddenly become locked onto Team Math Class, who appeared to be the only team left who could grab the third and potentially final Day 1 clear. It was a brutal race to the finish that saw thousands of viewers on Twitch. Math Class would complete the Last Wish raid with a final time of 24:02, meaning they were just 2 minutes shy of officially earning a Day 1 completion. The community went ballistic, and the public outcry was torn between players on one side of the fence saying things like, "It's just 2 minutes, Bungie, their clear should still count as a Day 1 clear," while others held the opinion of, "No group of players should be given special treatment, it should not count as a Day 1 clear." Content creator and member of Math Class Datto, while understandably disappointed by missing the clear by just 2 minutes, took the situation with a respectable attitude and did not want any special treatment. 2 minutes off the emblem. Feels real bad, man. World's third ain't too bad. 25 hours later, we done. 67,000 viewers peak is by far the most I've ever had. Thanks to my Math Class team for sticking it out. Thanks to Bungie for that bastard of a raid. I'm going to bed. Following the Last Wish raid, 2402 cemented itself as an iconic meme in the world of Destiny, as well as Datto's YouTube and Twitch communities for years to come. Although it seemed he was annoyed at first, and honestly, who wouldn't be, over the years, Datto would eventually lean into the meme of 2402, even going as far as to create merch that featured the iconic number. All in all, Last Wish was a savage raid, with a grand total of 132,482 players jumping in on day one, and only two fire teams total securing the day one clear, making the Wish Ascended emblem one of the rarest emblems in the entire game even to this day, only having ever been earned by 12 players total. And while Last Wish's player numbers and the Forsaken expansion overall was a huge success, things were about to take a very strange turn in what would eventually go down as one of the biggest shows in Destiny raiding history. As mentioned earlier, with the release of the Forsaken expansion in 2018, Destiny 2 was now on what Bungie called a seasonal model. Season of the Forge launched on December 4th, 2018, exactly 3 months to the day after the launch of Forsaken, with the Scourge of the Past raid dropping 3 days later on Friday, December 7th. This was the first raid to happen, location-wise, inside of Humanity's Last City, and it was the second time the players were battling against the Fallen. While the Last Wish raid had been a situation where barely any D2 players were ready power level-wise for the Day 1 raid race, Scourge of the Past was the exact opposite situation. Players were able to grind and prepare in many ways. Some were bounty hoarding, a process where players would mass collect and complete in-game bounties but refuse to turn them in until a time of their choosing, which would result in an avalanche of XP all at once. Other players ran the Last Wish raid several times, which allowed them to stock up on Ethereal Keys, aka tokens that could be turned in at a time of the player's choosing for high-level loot. On top of this, the light cap had only been raised from 600 to 700. For those reasons, reasons and more, many players found themselves overleveled for the day one raid, practically in superhero level form compared to Last Wish. But there were other odd things happening as well. At the time of the Scourge of the Past raid, Destiny 2 and Bungie were still under the umbrella of Activision. Due to an odd glitch involving Activision's proprietary PC launcher, players could obtain the IP addresses of their Fireteam members. To put it plainly, if streamers accidentally left their Fireteams on public, random players could potentially join their Fireteams out of nowhere and obtain their IP address. Predictably, bad actors decided they were going to ruin the fun. Streamers like Gathalion, Professor Broman, T-Rex, Slayeridge, Miss5000Watts, and countless others were straight up not able to participate in the raid race due to getting repeatedly DDoSed as their IP addresses had been leaked. And believe it or not, that's not all. Coincidentally, Discord, the main voice chat platform that the majority of PC players used for chatting with their own fireteams while playing D2, had crashed the same day as the raid race. Discord is dead at the moment, but working on reviving. Hang tight. Also, many players remembered how incredibly difficult the Last Wish raid was on day one and assumed this would be a similar situation, not even bothering to touch the raid during the first 24 hours. The end result was the lowest populated day one raid in the history of Destiny, with a grand total of only 27,517 Guardians attempting Scourge of the Past within the first 24 hours, which was already unfortunate, but even if players weren't getting repeatedly DDoSed and Discord hadn't crashed, Scourge of the Past, while stylish and fun, fell drastically short in terms of challenge. Not just when compared to Last Wish, but to most other raids up to that point in general. The first encounter alone was beaten after just 20 minutes, and once reached, the final boss was defeated in around only 40 minutes. Nevertheless, the world's first raid clear was officially claimed by Clan Tier 1, with a grand total clear time of 1 hour and 47 minutes. A pathetic comparison to the gauntlet of Last Wish overall. All in all, 954 fireteams completed Scourge of the Past in the first 24 hours, aka 5,724 Guardians total. This meant that roughly 20% of all teams who attempted Scourge on day one were able to complete it, the highest day one raid success rate in the history of the game up to that point. Even though things weren't looking good for day one raids after Scourge, little did the player base know that they had just passed over the community low point raid-wise, and player numbers would slowly improve for several years from that point on. Even though year two of Destiny 2 had already seen two raids in the form of Last Wish and Scourge of the Past, players would receive a third raid in the spring of 2019. Season of Opulence launched on Tuesday, June 4th, 2019, with the featured raid Crown of Sorrow dropping exactly 6 hours later on that same day. Many players were extremely annoyed that the raid was dropping so soon after the launch of the new season, especially in the middle of the work week, but Bungie defended their decision. The world's first race for a raid is a competitive event. The raid is a challenge geared toward testing a fireteam's ability to learn and execute on the mechanics, as well as their ability to overcome enemies and bosses together. Having a short window of time between the release and launch allows us to preserve the combat challenge for players making their attempt on day one and get people playing the raid content right away. This attitude would change in the future, as Crown of Sorrow marked the last time that Bungie would release a day one raid on any day other than a Friday or a Saturday. For the time being, though, players were irritated about the fact that seemingly only full-time streamers or folks who didn't have to work on Tuesday or Wednesday would be able to have a realistic shot at getting a day one raid clear. The Crown of Sorrow raid would also mark the creation of an interesting new mechanic by Bungie that would become a staple to day one raids from this point forward, the contest mode modifier. Because players were wildly overleveled for the previous raid, Scourge of the Past, the contest modifier was created with the purpose of hitting all day one raiders with an auto-enforced light level cap, meaning that no matter how high your level was as a Guardian, the game would automatically cap you at 20 light levels under whatever the difficulty of the final encounter was. This ensured that no matter how hard they prepped, players were in for a challenge no matter what. The contest modifier is still used to this day in brand new raids and is widely viewed as a success in day one raiding by the community at large. In the days approaching the launch of Season of Opulence and the Crown of Sorrow raid, players began to put together detailed power level guides on how to reach 720 power as quickly as possible when the new content dropped. As with the new contest modifier, 720 was the most powerful anyone could be stepping into the day one raid. Most guides detailed the amount and type of items that should be hoarded before a new season released, as well as what activities and in which order Guardians should be doing them that day to maximize results during the 6 hour window before the raid. Essentially, players were aiming to complete a week's worth of content for all three of their characters condensed into a 6 hour window. Players prepared as much as they could before the raid, and they went hard. While not not living up to the insanity of Last Wish, Crown of Sorrow proved to be a significantly harder raid than Scourge of the Past and was overall received relatively well by the community. Bungie had mentioned before the launch of the raid that the raid team that officially grabbed the title of World's First Clear would get a guaranteed raid exotic weapon drop for every member on the fire team from the final boss's loot chest. When Team Math Class defeated the final boss, everyone on the fire team received the exotic weapon drop Tereba. Therefore, they understandably assumed that they had officially snagged a world's first clear. In what had to be a truly heart-wrenching moment for Math Class, this unfortunately turned out to be a glitch and unintentional troll. The official world's first clear had actually been grabbed by Clan Be Bold, with a final clear time of 4 hours and 40 minutes. Team Math Class had officially gotten world's second clear, missing a world's first again, and having killed the final boss just 6 minutes and 27 seconds too late. Up to that point, it was the shortest amount of time between the world's first and world's second clear of a day one raid to date. All in all, 54,927 players had attempted to beat Crown of Sorrow on day one. Not nearly as popular as Last Wish, but still both a noticeable step up from the clunky Scourge of the Past. 104 fire teams were able to successfully clear the raid on day one, but oddly, 103 of those fire teams were all playing on PC. Only one team playing on console was able to beat the raid on day one, the team of YouTube Rick Kakis. The fact that only one console team had been able to conquer contest mode didn't sit well with many Guardians, who felt the PC players, who had access to certain things like the ability to increase their FOV, were sitting with a natural advantage. Sad that not a single team on Xbox has beaten this, and only one team on PS4 beat it. That just shows how poorly designed these are for console. Console got trashed in this event. Over 90 clears and one console clear. This experience has hugely alienated console players, but I guess Bungie only cares about PC now. Unbeknownst to the community, customizable FOV sliders would eventually come to console, but this change was still a fair ways away, and the console day one dry spell was, unfortunately, about to get even worse. Year 3 of Destiny 2 kicked off in the fall of 2019 with the release of Season of the Undying, which fell under the umbrella of the overall new expansion for the year, which was called Shadowkeep. The Shadowkeep expansion would bring several long-standing changes to the game, including the first ever armor rework since the launch of D2, giving players 3 new armor stats, as well as the introduction of champion enemies. These were enemies that were very difficult to kill unless properly stunned in place with specific weapon mods that needed to be equipped by the player. The season launched on Tuesday, October 1st, 2019, with the new raid Garden of Salvation scheduled to drop 4 days later. This would be the first Destiny-related content to be released by Bungie without Activision as its publisher, and also the first raid in Destiny history to be released on a Saturday, which the community was incredibly happy about, as it meant that more players who worked Monday to Friday would be able to participate in the day one raid race without it interfering with their day jobs. The raid itself featured Guardians following a strange signal into the Black Garden, where they would wind up fighting a giant Vex known as the Sanctified Mind. For the first time since Last Wish, day one player numbers had jumped back up to 6 digits, with a grand total of 116,783 players attempting Garden on day one. From here on out, and still to this day, all day one raid player numbers would now consistently be in the 6-digit ballpark. Even though Crown of Sorrow was the very first raid to use the contest modifier, Garden of Salvation was a strong continued proof of concept. Even with the raid dropping several days after the launch of the new season, the contest modifier continued to ensure that no player or team could skirt the challenge of a day one raid by simply over-preparing. Garden proved to be a solid challenge for players, and the battle between which team would finish first would truly go down to the wire. The world's first clear would ultimately go to Clan Ascend, with a final clear time of 6 hours and 14 minutes. The team that earned world's second clear finished just 2 minutes and 33 seconds behind Clan Ascend, making this the closest world's first race in history at the time. To make things even crazier, only one former world's first team managed to place in the top 5 fastest clears, Clan Tier 1. For all its participants, only a grand total of 96 teams managed to obtain a Day 1 Garden of Salvation clear. With less than 600 total Guardians owning the Dive into Darkness Day 1 emblem from this raid, Garden's prize now currently sits as the third rarest contest mode emblem a player can have, behind Crown of Sorrow with 500 and Last Wish with 12. Of the 96 teams that managed to clear the raid on day one, the number of teams that had done so playing on PC was 96, meaning that a grand total of zero console teams had cleared Garden of Salvation on day one. Again, FOV customization for console players would eventually come to D2, but until that point, it would seem that the vast majority of day one clears would continue to occur on PC, which frustrated a lot of the console player base. Despite low overall completion numbers, Garden was a well-received raid by the community and remains a popular fan favorite for speedrunners even to this day. For Bungie, the player message was clear that when a raid race fell on a weekend, far more players were interested in participating. The competition at the top level was getting fiercer, but the player base had no idea by just how much. One clan in particular was very close to beginning what would become a wild streak of day one raid domination. The gaming industry was one of many affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, with hundreds of new titles being delayed as many development teams pivoted to working remotely. Bungie was no exception, and Destiny 2's next major expansion was delayed from September 22nd to November 10th. For the first time since King's Fall, the community would have to wait for more than a year for the release of a new raid. Now completely free from Activision, Bungie would work on upgrading the game's overall foundations as well as transition Destiny 2 into a free-to-play game at its core. Year 4 of Destiny 2, Beyond Light, released on November 10th, 2020, with the arrival of Season of the Hunt along with many in-game changes. The first of which was sunsetting, both of content and gear. Bungie reasoned that a live service game would eventually grow too large over time if all content in the game remained playable at all times. Therefore, they decided to put old content in what they would call the DCV, or Destiny Content Vault. This would include all of Destiny 2's Year 1 content and several raids, including Leviathan the Eater of Worlds, Spire of Stars, Scourge of the Past, and Crown of Sorrow. Bungie also planned to begin sunsetting gear at this point in time. The proposed system would mean that once new gear was acquired, it would essentially be given 1 year of in-game viability, after which the weapon would still remain in the game but would have a capped light level, making it weaker when used in newer content as the game's power level continued to rise. Beyond Light would also introduce an entirely new darkness-based subclass for players to experience, Stasis, the first all-new subclass element in the history of the game. Power level-wise, the Beyond Light expansion would force all players to be reset back to a base of 1100 light. That meant that the grind for the day one raid would be similar to that of Last Wishes, but instead of going from 400 to 550 light, Guardians were expected to go from 1100 to 1230 light. Fortunately, there was plenty of time. The day one raid contest modifier had been so successful to prevent over-preparing that Bungie was okay with giving players plenty of time to settle in with all of Beyond Light's new changes, as well as get familiar with the entirely new subclass. The Deepstone Crypt raid would launch on Saturday, November 21st, 2020, a full 11 days after the launch of Beyond Light and Season of the Hunt. When the doors opened, players poured into the day one raid, with a grand total of 265,389 Guardians seeking a contest mode completion, more than double the number of players that had attempted Garden of Salvation. Deepstone Crypt was widely loved by the community at large. The fights were interesting, the environments were beautiful, and at times awe-inspiring. The lore was compelling and gave deeper insight into the backstory of the initial creation of the Exo Race. The raid's in-game music track, Deepstone Lullaby, which played in an outdoor jumping puzzle set in outer space, is still considered by many to be one of the best tracks in all of Destiny. After 5 hours and 29 minutes, the world's first clear would officially be claimed by Clan Luminous. According to Aotera, member of Clan Luminous, their team had never raided as a 6-player fireteam before. Two of their members were meeting for the first time that day, and another member of their team, Flux, had to briefly leave the raid during the race to momentarily infuse weapons before returning to the fight. The world's second clear, grabbed by a team known as Clan Elysium, would happen just 13 minutes later. The 3rd, 4th, and 5th place clears would all take place during the next 10 minutes. It would become the first of many close races in a contest mode raid. Unfortunately, despite its overall success, the Deepstone Crypt raid was not free from controversy. On November 12th, several days before the raid would even launch, a thread from the raid secret subreddit was posted containing information that, if followed, would allow players to enter one of the upcoming raid areas via performing an out-of-bounds glitch. Even though players were not able to run any raid encounters early or develop any sort of encounter-related strategy, strategies, it still meant that some players, if they decided to perform the out-of-bounds glitch, were able to, at the very least, see and map out certain areas of the raid before it launched. So did you confirm none of them are actively in the Raid Secrets Discord and Reddit? Considering they were heavily involved in the leaks and data mining of the raid, may want to double check that also. This brought some scattered skepticism regarding the integrity of Deepstone Crypt's raid race, but it would seem that since the information about out-of-bounding was 100% public knowledge, nothing ever came of it. But it did manage to raise concerns about Bungie's ability to prevent potentially more compromising raid knowledge from being leaked in the future. A grand total of 5,325 fire teams were able to get a clear of Deepstone Crypt on day one, meaning around 12% of teams that had gone in to attempt the challenge wound up getting a clear. Platform-wise, around 91% of teams that had gotten a day one clear did so on PC, while 9% had taken place on console. Thankfully, Deepstone Crypt would be the last raid where console players were unable to adjust and expand their FOV, as that functionality was finally patched into D2 on December 8th, 2020. The jump in day one player numbers from Garden to Deepstone Crypt was exciting for the community overall, but little did everyone know that the most populated raid in years was about to arrive, along with the official starting point of one of the game's most dominant raid team dynasties to ever exist. Still under the umbrella of Destiny 2 Year 4, Season of the Splicer would officially launch on Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. The community was in a frenzy as Bungie had announced that the next raid was going to be a Destiny 2 version of the first ever raid from D1, Vault of Glass. The raid would also be the first free-to-play endgame PvE activity to be added under the relatively new free-to-play seasonal model for the game. Many players were immediately skeptical, though. After all, how could Bungie seriously propose having a raid race on a raid that many players have already played before and knew how it worked? The answer was actually fairly creative. First, the teams competing for the title of World's First or the Day 1 emblem would have to beat the reprised version of the raid on contest mode, but that was only step one. After doing so, they would have to relaunch the raid for a second time under a new limited time mode called Tempo's Edge. That version of the raid would not only continue to use the contest mode modifier, but would also require fire teams to beat each encounter again with a new secret encounter specific challenge. For example, if the Templar boss was allowed to teleport even one time during the boss fight, teams would automatically fail the encounter. Failing any of these hidden challenges would wipe the fire team and force them to start the encounter over. In short, not only did you have to beat the entire contest mode raid twice in a 24-hour window, but the second time you played through, you had to discover and complete the additional encounter-specific challenge in order to progress. The fact that this was a free-to-play raid, combined with the knowledge that some D2 players who never played D1 wanted to experience Vault of Glass for the first time, the day one player numbers exploded. A grand total of 423,914 Guardians went in to take on the D2 Vault of Glass raid on day one. This was more than four times the number of the original participants in the day one Destiny Vault of Glass raid and the most active day one raiders since the launch of Leviathan in 2017. In what would eventually become a new trend for future raids, the D2 Vault of Glass raid was the first time that Bungie would fully disable a piece of gear from being usable in a day one raid. Players were not allowed to equip the brand new exotic hunter leg armor, the Star Eater Scales, as they were buffing the damage of some hunter supers far more than intended. Bungie had also mentioned that they were aware of a potential exploit that would allow players to skip an entire encounter by physically pushing the final boss Atheon off the map to his death. They announced that any team caught using this exploit on either their first or second playthrough would officially not qualify for the title of World's First. Thankfully, no one would, and the reprised Vault of Glass raid would go off without a hitch. The first team to accomplish their first clear of Vault of Glass was Clan Elysium, who got to and defeated Atheon in a blazing 1 hour and 43 minutes. At that point, they began their second playthrough on Tempo's Edge mode, with around a 40-minute head start over other teams that were still on playthrough number 1. Things were beginning to get dicey, as Clan Elysium, in the lead, had to spend a fair amount of their time actually trying to discover what the Tempo's Edge edge challenges were, while teams that were slowly catching up would immediately be able to know what the challenges were already by just watching Clan Elysium. Even though other teams were rapidly catching up and nipping at their heels, Clan Elysium secured the world's first clear of Vault of Glass, successfully clearing the raid on both modes with a grand total time of 4 hours and 13 minutes. Despite being a reprised raid, the community reaction to Vault of Glass was positive overall, a faithful and challenging recreation of the iconic original Destiny raid. Out of 423,914 players who attempted the raid, 2,814 teams overall managed to get a day one clear, leaving VoG with an overall completion rate of around 4%. Players didn't know it at the time, but Clan Elysium was about to completely erupt into one of the most dominant contest mode raid teams that Destiny would ever see. You'll notice I said contest mode raid teams and not day one raid teams. That's because the concept of day one raids were about to be forever changed.
Don't you want to escape? This throne world is indistinguishable from my own mind, Guardian. Every step taken, every bullet fired, I keep and count them all. It's not too late to turn around.
Year 5 of Destiny 2 would arrive on Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022, with the launch of the Witch Queen expansion, which overall was mostly hailed as a great success for the game. For the first time, players were given a legendary difficulty campaign, meaning players would have an actual challenge in the game's new campaign rather than just god stomping through a new storyline in a matter of minutes. The story was also beginning to get incredibly juicy, and the campaign was filled with some very enticing twists and turns. New weapon types and weapon crafting were also introduced in this expansion, and both players and critics had genuinely positive things to say about the Witch Queen overall. To expand on what they had done with the Vault of Glass raid, Bungie released a new Day 1 gear ban list to make sure teams wouldn't breeze through the challenge of a contest mode raid. This time, however, the list was slightly longer than before. Bungie disabled 4 weapons in total, as well as 2 pieces of exotic armor and a particular armor mod on the seasonal artifact. At this time in Destiny's lifespan, Day 1 raids were becoming a very competitive event. Players were getting serious in both practicing for new raids and preparing for new seasons. Bounty hoarding was no longer a recommendation for most players, it was the new norm. Also, teams were starting to work with coaches and scouts to keep an eye on other players and live streams for any helpful information that could be relayed back to their corresponding team. 11 days after the launch of both the Witch Queen and Season of the Risen, the Vow of the Disciple raid would open its doors on Saturday, March 5th, 2022. 384,441 players total stepped in to attempt the day one raid, but something unexpected happened that would forever change new raids from that day forward. Bungie's servers began to fail. Hard. In contrast to the launch of the Witch Queen, which has seen a mostly smooth launch, players in the Vow of the Disciple raid race were encountering error codes left and right. Simply getting to the first raid encounter was becoming an odyssey. Clan Redeem spent around 2 hours trying to just start the raid without getting any errors. Teams were getting sent back to orbit constantly, and because this was a race with a limit on how much time players had to compete, people were understandably very upset. After a few hours, Bungie, who had been scrambling to fix the servers, tweeted the following: "Contest mode has been extended an additional 24 hours and will now end on Monday, March 7th at 10 a.m. PDT. This is to give those experiencing connection issues in the Vow of the Disciple raid a chance to obtain the Cleaver emblem." In short, the raid race would now, and for the first time ever, take place over a 48-hour window, not a 24-hour window. Some players immediately hated this decision, as it meant that the regular raid, which became playable after contest mode was officially over, would now begin on Monday and not Sunday, meaning many of those players might not be able to experience the regular raid for at least another week due to work or school. But many players rejoiced, knowing that they now had all the more time to potentially lock up a contest clear and obtain a rare emblem. Unfortunately, the server issues continued. Encounters were suffering from desyncs, as well as various soft and hardlocking glitches. Because this was a brand new raid, it wasn't always immediately clear if a wipe was due to poor understanding of mechanics or due to glitches and bugs. Clan Elysium had to redo the first encounter 3 times. For math class, the caretaker encounter would get bugged and no boss would spawn in their instance for a while. The first team that managed to defeat the caretaker got softlocked and had to restart from scratch. The caretaker was actually one of the biggest damage checks in a Destiny 2 raid at the time, with a health pool so large it managed to dwarf that of some final bosses, including Riven, the Sanctified Mind, and Tanix. In short, beating the caretaker just to be forced to restart the raid was a huge setback. Clan Ascend got an early lead and was the first big team to get to the final boss of the raid, Rulk, with Math Class right on their heels. Clan Elysium was also catching up fast, despite their 3-reset setback. Since many teams competing, as mentioned, had friends trying to keep an eye on other top teams to take note of what strategies they were using, both Clan Ascend and Math Class decided to mute their team's comms. This way, they would avoid revealing their team's DPS strategy during the final boss fight. The fight against Rulk was an interesting boss fight and was unlike other raids before. Ever since the introduction of the Warlock's Radiant Well, many fire teams would deal with big boss fights by planting a well in the ground and having the entire team huddle around it to deal damage. Rulk, however, was a highly mobile boss, moving all over a wide area and making this particular strategy that players had come to rely on quite difficult. At one point, Clan Ascend seemed like they had the win in the bag, but ultimately fell short, wiping during Rulk's final stand mechanic. Meanwhile, Elysium and Math Class were unknowingly neck and neck as they both entered their final showdown against Rulk at nearly the same time. In the end, the world's first clear would go to Clan Elysium with a final clear time of 7 hours and 14 minutes, beating out Math Class by a mere 3 minutes and 15 seconds. This was Clan Elysium's second world's first raid win, and they had now officially become the second team in the history of the game to win 2 day 1 raid races back to back. Vow of the Disciple changed the raiding landscape. The circumstances that caused the raid to be extended from 24 to 48 hours were unfortunate, but the player base at large was happy with the new 48 hour window, as even though the average player might not be able to win world's first, they were far more likely to earn a contest clear. From this point on, every new raid introduced into Destiny 2 would see a 48-hour window to earn a contest clear rather than a 24-hour window. As the next raid approached, the player base wondered, would Redeem or Elysium earn their third ever World's First clear, or would Math Class finally end their long tradition of second and third place finishes and finally snag a crown? Season of the Plunder, the third season under the umbrella of the Witch Queen expansion, launched on August 23rd, 2022, and players were eagerly anticipating the release of the new raid, but Bungie had officially decided to introduce a revamped raid from Destiny 1, Kingsfall. If you remember, the original Kingsfall raid in D1 had set the record for the most Day 1 participants in a Destiny raid ever. It was a fan favorite without question, and expectations were high. Because Bungie did not want a repeat of the server issues that plagued Vow of the Disciple, the revamped Kingsfall raid would launch on Friday, August 26th, 2022. That would ensure that more hands were available on deck at Bungie HQ in case the servers required immediate attention. It also meant that because of the new 48-hour window standard, the contest mode would officially end at reset on Sunday, August 28th, which casual players were happy about, as it meant they could now enjoy the regular difficulty raid starting on Sunday rather than on Monday, as had been the case with Vow. The revamped Kingsfall raid would follow the same pattern of Destiny 2's revamped Vault of Glass. In order to officially get the title of World's First, players would need to beat the raid twice. First on Contest Mode, and then again on Challenge Mode, where they had to complete an unknown objective on each encounter or their fire team would automatically wipe. At this stage in Destiny 2, Guardians were vastly more powerful than they were in D1. They had strong tools in their kit when compared to D1, things like Well of Radiance, as well as an entirely new subclass in Stasis. Hardcore AdClear perks like Incapable Incandescent, and Voltshot were a dream compared to AdClear options available in D1. The Resilience armor stat could now offer up to a whopping 40% incoming damage reduction buff, and buildcrafting was reaching new heights as the subclasses were starting to get their 3.0 reworks. It was very much suspected that Bungie was going to have their hands full in delivering a sufficient challenge with revamped King's Fall, as Guardians were now slowly beginning to become walking demigods. For the first time ever, Bungie's list of disabled gear and exotics for the Day 1 raid would include an entire weapon type. Every heavy grenade launcher, with the exception of just a few, were on the list of weapons that had been disabled. Teams planned and buildcrafted accordingly, and on Friday, August 26th, the revamped King's Fall raid would be attempted overall by a grand total of 485,120 Guardians. Most teams were moving relatively swiftly, and surprisingly, a team that had no World's First titles was, for the moment, leading the pack. Team Abysmal was the first team to clear Contest Mode, followed quickly by Space Force and then Tofu Bake. Abysmal would begin their second run on Challenge Mode, a full 25 minutes ahead of Team Elysium, who would be the 12th team overall to officially start their second playthrough. Teams started to feel the pressure during Challenge Mode, and eventually Math Class and Abysmal, who were neck and neck, would both get passed by Elysium, who was gaining traction fast. By this point, raid teams muting their comms on stream as they approached the finish line had become the new norm, as it would ensure that any DPS strategies were less likely to be copied by rival teams. This would, unfortunately, make the viewing experience on Twitch pretty frustrating for many viewers, but teams who were really close to finishing first wanted to protect their team's strategy from stream scouts as much as they could. With the comms of many teams muted, the only clue scouts were able to obtain were the buffs and weapon perks that were active on Clan Elysium's HUD as they pounded away with heavy DPS and linear fusion rifles. After having gained some truly insane momentum, Elysium would officially earn the world's first clear on Oryx with a total clear time of 4 hours and 59 minutes, not only claiming their third belt, but becoming the first team to ever pull off a world's first three-peat. It was a dominating finish, as Elysium would officially finish almost a full half hour before the second team managed to cross the finish line, Clan Space Force. A grand total of 3,028 fire teams managed to complete Contest Mode after 48 hours, meaning that even with a full 48-hour window, the King's Fall raid was a sufficient challenge, as only 5% of those who attempted the raid would succeed. The raid landscape was changing. New speedrunning teams were making names for themselves and earning top placements, and Elysium had officially cemented themselves as the new team to beat. The next raid that players would experience would also cement itself into the Destiny history books, but for all the wrong reasons.
What they do then. Unshackled from hope. That is who they are. Because only in the end.
Year 6 of Destiny 2 launched on Tuesday, February 28th, 2023, under the new expansion Lightfall, along with Season of Defiance. Bungie had announced that Lightfall's corresponding raid, Root of Nightmares, would drop the following weekend on Friday, March 10th. Story-wise, the Lightfall expansion had players following and hunting down the exiled Cabal Emperor Kallus, who was now a full-on disciple of the Witness, a mysterious future boss that the community knew very little about. The campaign would take place on Neptune, where Guardians would unlock the game's second new Darkness subclass, Strand. Unfortunately for Bungie, the Lightfall campaign was very poorly received when compared to the widely loved Witch Queen campaign just 1 year earlier. The story was overly vague, had characters that the vast majority of the player base just didn't connect with, and felt more like just one long tutorial on how to use Strand and nothing else. To make matters worse, Strand felt underwhelming to many players, forcing Bungie to release additional aspects and fragments early that were supposed to remain locked until after the raid race. One new feature introduced in Lightfall that players loved was the in-game loadout feature, which allowed players to open their menus and change from one loadout to another, even mid-combat. This would actually create a whole new world of challenges for Bungie, as speedrunners were now able to easily and quickly swap back and forth between different loadouts in the middle of an encounter, or even sometimes in the middle of a damage phase in order to min-max as efficiently as possible. Again, this is something that could be done in the blink of an eye with as little as three clicks. 6. Between how powerful Guardians had become over the years and how many game-breaking builds had been discovered in a matter of days, Bungie was forced to post their longest list of disabled Day 1 raid items up to that point. The Necrotic Grip Gauntlets were disabled just 15 minutes before the raid was set to start. The raid launched and players poured in, with a grand total of 582,428 Guardians taking on the challenge over the first 48-hour window. The usual teams were in attendance. Elysium, Redeem, Lumen, Tier 1 and Math Class, among others, were all in the race. But in addition to the usual suspects, some newer teams were starting to creep into the spotlight as well, like clans Indebted, Nightmare, and Respire. Up to this point in time, we've already gone over how some teams had gotten into the habit of muting their comms to prevent their strategies of being picked up by stream scouts. This would reach a new level in the Root of Nightmares as teams started to cover up information on their HUD with their webcam or with the use of completely random images. In short, now teams that found themselves in the lead were being protective of both their audio and video feeds. The funny part, though, is that for Root of Nightmares, it was almost a completely moot point. As the race went on, teams began to notice that Root was not as mechanically complex as other raids. To put it bluntly, when compared with other contest raids in D2, Root of Nightmares was easy. Unusually easy. Team Hard in the Paint wound up getting the world's first clear with an unbelievably fast time of just 2 hours and 25 minutes, the fastest a team had burned through a raid since Scourge of the Past. When the 48-hour contest mode window was over, a grand total of 45,551 fire teams had beaten Root of Nightmares, meaning that roughly 47% of all players that had stepped into the raid on contest mode, again intended to be the most difficult endgame content in the game, had locked up a contest clear. This officially made Root of Nightmares by more than 8 times the raid cleared by the most players during contest mode. This stirred the community up into a frenzy as players, content creators, game journalists, and more discussed and debated their feelings on Root of Nightmares. If Wrath of the Machine, Eater of Worlds, and Deepstone Crypt had generated some discussion online, Root of Nightmares was in a whole different ballpark altogether. Many players were relieved to have finally conquered their first ever contest mode, but many others felt Bungie had completely dropped the ball and that Root of Nightmares was nothing more than a 6-player strike. Streamer and content creator Astrocross had this to say: "If there was to be a raid that was going to be more inclusive, I'm glad it's this one, because I'm okay with Nezerac and this raid being as easy as it was, but hear me out, Final Shape, that raid, it's going to have to pop." Based on the numbers alone, Bungie was in a tight spot. Having more players engaging with your content is a huge goal for any studio or developer, but questions were being raised about where the line should be drawn difficulty-wise. Would the next raid give players a significant challenge, or were the days of user-friendly raids here to stay? The player base was about to find out.
Can stop his wrath.
Back in 2022, when asked about what would be the next reprised raid in Destiny 2, the game's then-director Joe Blackburn replied that they wanted to, quote, bring back a banger and also, quote, it will be one of the big raids and that takes one out of the equation. Based on his wording, the community at large expected and hoped that this meant the return of D1 community favorite Wrath of the Machine. Bizarrely though, Bungie revealed that the next revamped raid would be none other than Crota's End. This was, for lack of a better phrase, extremely ballsy by Bungie and met with a fair amount of laughter from the player base. I will explain. At this point in time, the original Crota's End raid, while certainly lovely from a nostalgia perspective, was now seen as a borderline joke. Towards the end of D1's lifespan, players had gotten significantly more talented and raid bosses had evolved a lot since Crota. Not only were players now able to kill Crota completely solo, some were literally doing so by controlling their guardians with their feet or even while playing completely blindfolded. Unless Bungie was about to really cook, it was highly assumed that revamped Crota's End would be a cakewalk. After all, how hard could it be for six guardians to clear a three-encounter raid that was basically smaller than some of Destiny 2's dungeons? Apparently, though, Bungie was fully aware that this would be the community worry, and they had a plan. First, they announced that contest mode would be overhauled for the raid. They would increase the cap of players' outgoing damage versus enemy combatants, while the incoming damage cap would remain unchanged. Some enemies would gain elemental shields, and all enemies would be, quote, more aggressive than in the previous contest mode. As expected, Bungie would also release the list of disabled gear for the contest mode raid, and it was the longest ban list the community had seen so far, with several exotics, mods, and aspects making the cut. And so, on Friday, September 1st, 2023, the revamped Crota's End raid would happen, and 343,838 players would descend into the dark below to hunt down Oryx's son once more. The expectation of a cakewalk was almost immediately thrown out the window. Enemies were tough. Even though the overall layout and environment of the original Crota's lair remained the same, Bungie had added many bells and whistles, not to mention additional mechanics, many of which had timers. And instead of just losing a buff or getting a minor setback, missing a timer would usually mean instant death. In addition to that, both bosses had wiping conditions for each of their damage phases. That meant that entering damage could mean a forced restart each time. In short, Bungie had heard the feedback from Root of Nightmares loud and clear and were dropping players headfirst into the deep end. As multiple teams were reaching the end of the contest mode run, echoes of the original Crota's Day 1 in 2014 started to come up. Many teams, naturally, had planned to damage Crota based on what weapons were meta during that time, but their usual weapons weren't performing as well as they had hoped. So, with a callback to the original D1 version, many teams decided to try using their swords to damage Crota. The tactic showed great promise, and teams got to work. The tractor cannon exotic also shone as a key tool in this encounter. Remember that because this was a revamped raid, teams would have to clear the entire thing twice, once on contest mode and then again on challenge mode, to officially get world's first. Clan Elysium took the lead by finishing the first clear on contest mode in 3 hours and 13 minutes. Ultimately, Team Elysium would take the lead and snag their fourth world's first title by downing challenge mode Crota after 5 hours and 50 minutes. The race had come down to the wire, as Elysium had finished just 1 minute and 4 seconds before the next team would earn a clear. Elysium's day 1 clear time was more than twice the time it had taken the world's first team to clear Root of Nightmares, and Crota's End was now the longest reprised raid race, lasting 50 minutes more than Kingsfall and an hour and 40 minutes more than Vault of Glass. In the end, a total of 4,650 fire teams beat contest mode, a sharp but welcome decline from Root of Nightmares. Bungie had managed to make the contest raid a significant challenge, but they had to be careful. The next major expansion for the game was going to be the long-awaited conclusion of the Light and Dark Saga, which at this point was 10 years in the making. The next raid would no doubt be one of the most anticipated raids in the franchise, and the question on everyone's mind was, would Bungie deliver?
So I'm asking you one last time to rise.
Destiny had now almost been around for 10 whole years. The story, which had started in D1 as sort of a jumbled mess, was now something players were actually starting to care about. The Final Shape expansion was going to be the final chapter in what was now being referred to as the Light and Dark Saga, and Bungie had confirmed that the next raid would be an integral tie-in to the main storyline overall. The stakes had never been higher. Players wanted both a meaningful and impactful raid from a lore perspective that was also an adequate challenge, as this was arguably the most important new raid ever. Bungie knew they had to go hard. The original release date for the Final Shape, which had been scheduled for February, was scrapped and rescheduled for June of 2024, several months away. Whereas the last few seasons had only been around 90 or so days apart from one another, the wait between the launch of Season of the Wish, aka the final season of Year 6, and the launch of the Final Shape would now be a period of 189 days. Thankfully, to help pass the time, Bungie released a limited time event in April called Into the Light. Even though players had little to no expectations, as they were expecting this to be nothing more than a distraction while waiting for the final shape, Into the Light was received surprisingly well. Bungie had delivered a junior horde mode, something players had requested for a long time, as well as revamped fan-favorite weapons with chances at a rare shiny holofoil drop, and more. Sunsetting, which had slowly been getting curbed over the years, would also get an update. Bungie decided they would now officially unsunset all previously sunset weapons. Leading up to June, Bungie announced that the final shape would include a brand new hybrid subclass, a fusion of the light and the darkness called Prismatic. The anticipation was rising like crazy. Year 7 of Destiny 2 and the final shape expansion would finally launch on Tuesday, June 4th, 2024. And unfortunately, it started off on a sour note. Day 1 of Final Shape's release was a total mess, with some of the worst server errors Destiny had ever seen, even worse than the Vow of the Disciple raid. Players were getting kicked constantly or unable to log on at all. For many players, day one of the new expansion was a total loss, which was stressful for those wanting to prepare for the raid, as that was scheduled to drop only 3 days later on Friday, June 7th. In order to unlock the full power of Prismatic, players essentially had to go on a campaign-wide scavenger hunt, so the day one server setbacks were incredibly frustrating. As the raid approached, Bungie made it known that for the first time ever, completing a specific exotic mission was officially a prerequisite for launching the upcoming raid. At the time, the community had no way of knowing just how vital that quest would end up being. The day before the raid, Bungie posted the list of disabled items, and for the first time, entire weapon perks were now on the list, meaning that you simply were not able to use a weapon in the day one raid if it featured a certain banned perk. The final raid of the Light and Dark Saga, Salvation's Edge, would open its doors on Friday, June 7th, 2024. Any questions that players had about the overall difficulty level were immediately answered. This raid was hard. Really, really hard. It took around 2 hours for the first encounter to be completed by any one team. That alone was longer than some previous raid races in their entirety. The second encounter would take another hour and 50 minutes before being completed. The third encounter was based on mechanics from the first two. Clan Elysium, the heavy favorite to win, had picked up the pace and only needed a bit less than an hour to complete it. They were starting to pull ahead, and many people thought the raid race would soon be coming to an end. But for the first time since 2018, and unknown to the player base, this raid had 5 encounters. Elysium would need to complete 2 more if they wanted to take home a 5th championship belt. And it was at this exact point where everything would start to go crazy. The 4th encounter of Salvation's Edge, Verity, was a complex puzzle encounter with no boss. Players struggled hard trying to decipher the mechanics. Ultimately, the Verity encounter would go down in history as one of the most challenging day one raid puzzles ever, and one that new players still struggle with to this day. Unfortunately, this is where the complexity and overall challenge of the new raid started to work against itself. Because there was so much riding on the line for earning world's first in this raid, and because so many teams in the Verity encounter didn't want their strategies leaked by scouts, the vast majority of teams did something they had never before done in a raid race. Not only would they deafen their team's comms, but many teams would completely blacken their streams visually. Multiple front-running teams did this, and top streams in the D2 Twitch directory featured a wall of pure black screens or static images. No visuals, no sound, but still live and streaming. The race had gotten so intense that teams were in an information cold war. No one wanted to share their screens for fear of having their strategies for solving the Verity encounter stolen. It was a bizarre day one raid moment that would spark community-wide discussions even to this day about whether blackening streams during a day one raid race should be allowed. After multiple hours, Team John, featuring streamer ATP, would finally undarken their stream, revealing that at long last they had solved the Verity encounter. It seemed that Team John was now the front-running team, or so everyone watching on Twitch thought. Little did anyone know that another team that was not streaming had actually already been finished with the Verity encounter for over an hour. Clan Parabellum had been streaming privately among themselves and their coach, but all eyes on Twitch were on Team John as they marched forward towards the final encounter of the raid, The Witness. The Witness fight was brutal for many teams. There were several mechanics that ensured even the slightest mistake would be costly for all members of the fireteam. Damage phase was also incredibly tricky. Players would have to damage The Witness from a small suspended platform while also staying mobile and dodging his incoming attacks. This would prove to be one of the hardest damage checks in the franchise. franchise's history. The exotic quest that Bungie had made a mandatory prerequisite was for a sniper rifle called Still Hunt. This allowed players to essentially activate a mini golden gun with their sniper, even if they weren't playing on a hunter. However, hunters who used the Still Hunt were able to take advantage of a small, unique interaction. With the Celestial Nighthawk exotic helmet, they could condense their Still Hunt golden gun down into a single, stronger shot, basically giving them almost two supers, their regular golden gun and their Still Hunt golden gun, both of which were affected by Nighthawk. Ranged supers in general would prove to be vital in this encounter, as the Witness had a small crit zone and could not be approached physically, as players had to remain on the platform and shoot him from afar. Finally, after a grueling 18 hours and 59 minutes, Clan Parabellum completed the raid and earned their first ever championship belt. However, as they were not streaming, the news of their victory took the entire community by complete surprise. Salvation's Edge was now officially the longest raid race ever, surpassing Last Wish in completion time by 10 minutes. Ultimately, 213,864 fire teams went into the Salvation's Edge contest mode raid, with 688 teams earning a contest clear in the first 48 hours. For the first 10 teams that were able to clear the raid, their classes played were 16 Warlocks, 43 Hunters, and just one Titan. Some players were understandably annoyed at this statistic, as it essentially meant that any team that wasn't stacked up on Hunters was at a clear disadvantage going up against the Witness on contest mode. But no matter. The final raid of the Light and Dark Saga had gone out with a bang. It was a powerful moment in the overall story, and led to a new final mission that would unlock for the entire community, where players would now be able to hunt down and finish a weakened Witness. It was a beautiful and memorable end to a 10-year journey. But the overall story of Destiny, according to Bungie, is far from over. Destiny 2 is now about to enter Year 8 with a new expansion called The Edge of Fate, which will allegedly kick off an entirely new saga in the Year of Prophecy. It'll even include a new raid, set to launch on Saturday, July 19th, 2025. Whichever team will take home the belt is up to them, as the Guardians, as always, will make their own fate. Thank you for watching. This video took a really long time to make, so if you enjoyed it, please do me a favor and click the like button. And if you'd like a recap on the new raid after it launches, leave a comment down below. Thank y'all very much for watching, and I'll see you next time.